All right, we're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. The Gemara now is asking questions based on the response that Rova gave on yesterday's daf, which is Baimine Rav Chia Ba'avin Mirova Kikari Alecha. If he restricts his kikar, this loaf of bread, on the individual, and then he gives it to him as a gift, what's the din? So there the Gemara focused, depending on exactly what came out of the Girsa, focused on the language that was utilized, which is Kikari, when it is my kikar. So what's the relevance of the fact that it is his kikar? And so Rova suggests over there, it's pshita, that it's simple, the afagav, the avilebi matana, sur, that there's no question that if he gives it to him as a gift afterwards, that it still remains a sur, and that the kikari does not make it that only when it's in the possession of this individual is it restricted, but it's even restricted when it changes possession to the other person, obviously not with a third party in the middle. But if it goes directly to the party that was a sur b'hana'a, then the nether is in effect. Now the Gemara challenges that and says, Eitave, Amar lo, Hashileni paratcha. Or according to the Ran, the Girsa over here was Hashileni paratcha knuya. Says, lend me your para, your ox, your cow here to do some work. Now it's seemingly he has the cow that he's doing the work with right now, and the individual is asking him for a para, thinks that he has additional animals, or an additional para. And so the Bala para responds to him and says, Amalo, kunam para shani kanui lecha. So now the one way that it is stated over here is that it should be restricted. That's what the word kunam functions over here. Kol para, meaning of the word para here is any para that I have should be restricted to you. So that means that if I have any additional parot, implying that he doesn't have additional parot, they would be restricted to you anyway. So he's taking the nether to reinforce the fact that he doesn't have an additional para, but he does it in such a manner where he says that if I have any more parot, they're all asur b'hana to you. Or there's another possibility of the nether that he took, which is nechasai alecha. All my possessions will be restricted to you. Imeshli para elazu. If I have an additional cow or an additional ox to work on your behalf, aside from the one that I have here that I'm working with now that's engaged in working for me. Or, Hashileni kardumcha, lend me your spade, your hatchet, amarlo kunam, and so to be consistent with the other lashon, it would be kunam kardum li, she'ani kanui. So then, he's saying to him that kardum should be asur b'hana'a to you, or any kardum should be a surta hana'a, if I have, in addition to this kardum, another kardum. Or, nechasai alai, my possessions will be a surta to me, imeshli kardum elazeh, if I have an additional kardum besides this. So the difference between the first series and the second series, between the para and the kardum, is only in who is a surta b'hana'a over here. In the first case, the para is being oser, the questioner, or the one who is looking to borrow the para. He's making it asur to him, ba'ana'a. In the second statement, by the kardum, he's making it asur ba'ana'a to himself. If there's an additional item that this individual is requesting, and he said he doesn't have. Benimtza, sheyeshlo. And sure enough, he does have another para, or he doesn't have another kardum. So the neder is triggered. Bechayav, asur. As long as he's alive, it's asur. Mate, if he passes away, or gifted it to him, mutar. So if the potential lender over here passed away, or he gifted it to the borrower, mutar. That is mutar. And as you can see in the Rosh, the Ran over here says that it's tiyufta de rova. The Ran says kasha de rova de asur. Because over here, Rova said before, as we noted in yesterday's daf, that is pshita. Even if he gifts it to him, it remains a sur. Now, over here, you have an explicit braita indicating that it's mutar if you gift it to him. And therefore, it's a very strong question against the position of Rova. If you look in the Ran, where he says this, he says, Kasha the Rova dasar. If you look in the Gilyon HaShos and Rabbi Kiva Eger, he is somewhat perplexed by the question over here. And that is because, from yesterday's daf, at least according to the Ran, the focus of why Rova said his statement had to do with the language that was used in the nether. He says, "Bekashli ha Rova pashut rak mikoach chacha, dielu kikari alecha lafukei mai." Because it's, if you say that kikari means when it's my kikar, then it's asur, then what did he do? What did he asur on the other individual? And therefore, Rava says it must be that it includes even in a case where he gifts it to the other party. Now, the Gemara gave an alternative answer as to what he could have done or what could have been meant. It means that if he invites him over, he can't eat it. But Rava's intention or Rava's psak comes out of the fact that he says that kikari alecha only has meaning if you say it applies, even after he gifts it. Now, if that's the case, then Mibei Rava would agree in our case over here. The language that's being utilized in the neder in our case over here is not similar to the language that Rava was medayek out of in yesterday's daf. And therefore, Rabbi Kiva Eger says, I don't really understand the question. So maybe Rava would agree in our case over here that he is mutar bana because you don't have the diuk anymore of kikari alecha. Because over here, the individual specifically stated a neder. And then maybe here, the neder has relevance even when it remains in the possession of the individual. And so, he doesn't completely understand why the Gemara is challenging Rava from this bright or from this question over here. Nevertheless, the Gemara there here does give an answer, which is, Amar Avacha Breid Ravika, She Nitana Lo Ayede Acher. It was given to him by someone else. Amar Avashi, Dekanami, it's Minduyak in the Lashon of the Braita, that the Braita says, Dektani, Shenitana, Lo, Veloktani, Shenitana, Lo. Now, as the Ran points out, it, within the Braita, it's unclear. You would spell both of these words the same way. And generally, you would add in a Yud if it was a Chirik, which is what the Gemara is indicating over here, but there's no punctuation in the Braita. When Ravashi says it's Minduyak, it's not exactly Minduyak, because the word itself that's found in the Braita could be read either way. It could be read as Shenitana Lo with a Chirik, or it could be read as Shenitana Lo with a Shva underneath it. So there's no evidence that it's either way, whether there's a Chirik or a Shva under the Nun. So what the Rosh says over here is, Baal Peh, Haida Girsa Shgura Bifihem. Orally, that was the Girsa that they had in the Braita. So Ravash is not saying it was literally written down in the Braita this way, but that this was the Mesorah that they had about how to pronounce the word in the Braita. And the Ran writes of similar language, which is, Shaka Chaita Kabbalah Biyadam Likrot Nitnu Bechirik. So both of them say here that it was an issue of Mesorah. And that's what Afal Pi Shein Biktiva Shum Hefresh. Even though in terms of the writing, there's no way that it's clear. So it has nothing to do with the way that it's documented in the Braita, but rather it has to do with the Mesorah about how to pronounce the word in the Braita. What's the difference in the pronunciation of the word? Well, if you say that it's shenitana lo, that means that it came into his possession. It's versus shenitana lo, that he gave to him. So here we're talking about two parties. We're talking about the mash'il, the potential lender here, and the shoel and the potential borrower over here. Now, the way that the Braita phrases it is that shenitana lo b'matana. So if the item ends up in his possession because of a gift, then it's fine. And versus what the other language would have meant, which is shenitanalo, that the mashil, the potential lender, gifted it to the potential borrower. The difference being is that whether there's a third party involved. If there's a third party involved, then it does fall apart, and even Rav would agree in that case, and we saw that in yesterday's daf as well, which is that if you enter into a third party, then the nether falls apart. If the kikar, or whatever object that we're talking about here, that was asur bana, gets sold or given to a third party, and then that third party gifts it to this potential borrower over here, is no longer restricted by the nether, because the introduction of that third party basically nullifies or takes away the problem of the nether. On the other hand, if it's gifted directly from the person who took the nether, the madir over here, who is the potential mashil, the potential lender, then his gifting it directly to the individual will not free him of the neder. And that's how the Gemara solves the problem, basically to reconcile it with Rava's position, which is to say that Eino Chanami, it would be asur if he gifted it. It just happens to be in this case, it wasn't gifted directly to him. It came through a third party. It was sold or gifted to a third party. And then that third party gave it to the potential borrower. And that's what cleared up the neder or makes it mutar in this case. And the Ran says here, the inyan halacha, kaimelon, the afagav diave nihalevi matana, asur. And we, paskan halacha, that even if it's granted him as a gift, it's asur. D'hochi pashit le'rova. And that's the way that Rova concluded in our Gemara yesterday. Basikna dekanami diktani. And in addition to that, Ravashi says the Braita is miduyak to support the position of Rava now. Because the way that we're explaining the Braita now, the Braita is not talking about a case where it was gifted directly from the Madir to the Mudar, but rather it came through a third party, and that would support Rava's position. It would have been a much bigger chiddush to say that it was Mutar, even if it came directly from the Madir to the Mudar. The fact that the Braita doesn't say that indicates that they think like Rava, that it is a sur in that instance. The Kotav Arash Bazal, the Echid de Avi Matana Asur, Huadin, Imlacho Mudar Mimenu, the Chad Taimahu. The Rashba adds in addition to that, that it's irrelevant whether it's gifted versus purchased. That even if the potential borrower purchases it from the potential lender, that still remains under the restriction of the nether because they derive from the same reasoning, which is once he is Oser, the object, he's obviously not being oseret while it's in his possession. He's making a sur so that when it comes into the possession of the borrower or the mudar over here, that it will remain a sur. So that's meaningful both whether it was gifted to him or if he purchased it. In both those cases, the din remains the same. But, of course, if it goes through a third party, whether it was gifted to the third party or it was purchased by the third party, that would clear up the issue of the isra hana'ah. Now, we move on to a totally new question. It's a question that we had bumped into a little bit before because we were trying to explain the Mishnah in the previous perek. Over there, we mentioned the Shita of Rabbi Meir with regards to Kona Mot, which is, by Mine Rova mi Rav Nachman. Rova asked the Rav Nachman, Yesh mi'ila be Kona Mot, or lo? Does the din of mi'ila apply to Kona Mot or not? When it comes to Hekdesh, we know that with regards to Hekdesh, there is a din of mi'ila. Someone who misappropriates Hekdesh is Chayav, both in the compensation in terms of Mi'ila, as well as to bring a Korban Mi'ila, but that is associated with Hekdesh itself. What the Gemara wants to know is when you use Konam. Konam, which is an Isur that is generated through Hatpasa using the shame of Hekdesh, does that also take on the properties of Hekdesh as well? So much so that if one violates the nether, not only would they be in violation of Bal Yachel Devaro, but they'd also be in violation of Mi'ila. We have it from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Makom Shnotim Ale Aschar, Tipol Hana Al Hekdesh. The end of our Mishnah says that in a place where the person who returns the Aveda is entitled to some sort of reward or compensation for what he did, if in that case he is restricted in receiving Hana'a from the Bal Aveda for whatever reason, then that goes into Hekdesh. That money goes to Hekdesh. Lememra. That comes to teach you ki Hekdesh. That it's similar to Hekdesh. Ma Hekdesh yesh bo mila. Av konamot yesh ben mila. Just like Hekdesh has mila, so too konamot have mila. Because otherwise, you would have stated over here, not that it goes to Hekdesh, but rather either that it was asur bahana'a, or yolichenu liyamamelach. We have other terminologies that you would use in the Mishnah, if the only problem here was an Isra Hana'ah. The fact that the Mishnah specifically says that it belongs to Hekdesh or should go to Hekdesh means that it's telling you some more information, which is that this is just like Hekdesh. And just like Hekdesh has Mi'ila, so too Konamot have Mi'ila. Kitanae, this is a Machloket Tanaim. Konam Kikar Zo Hekdesh. So here, the truth is that this is really a duplicate language. Because either way, it would have been sufficient. If you say konam kikar zo, then it would be asur bana. That's the whole idea of konam. If you said kikar zo hekdesh, then it also would be hekdesh. The fact that you said konam kikar zo hekdesh seems to say the same thing twice. Rashi already notes this, and he says in konam kikar zo hekdesh, shamar b'lashon hekdesh, u'b'lashon konam. He uses both languages. V'hu adin nami lo amra lo b'lashon konam. Had he just said konam kikar zo, he would have had the same result. It happens to be over here that he used both languages. He used the language of konam kikar zo, and he used the language of kikar zo ekdesh. And so the combination ends up the same way as saying konam kikar zo, and the word ekdesh doesn't really add anything. That's Rashi's view over here. At the end, if you look in the Rosh says kikar ze hekdesh. He does not have the word konam in his girsa. And he says perush hekdesh gamur. That this statement here in the Braita is, Kikar Zo Hekdesh, means literally, this kikar is regular hekdesh. Now, if it's regular hekdesh, there's no question that there's mi'ila over here, because that's regular hekdesh. So what the Rosh explains over here is, umilta de pshita, you're right. It's very simple. There's no question about this part of the Braita. This section of the Braita is completely extraneous. It's just there for the remainder or for the latter part of the Braita. And that's why it's brought over here. But not because there's any meaning to this first section. So the way the Girsa of the Rosh reads is that Kikazo Hekdesh, without the word Konam associated with it. But the Tosafot, on the other hand, seems to support the Sheet of Rashi and says, L'chein ir alef ha'resh, d'resh lo ma'ir be'hekdesh mamash. It's not talking about real Hekdesh. Ela be'konam, be'loshon Hekdesh. Shasar kikar be'kol kamo Hekdesh. That it made the Kinyan Masur to everyone like Hekdesh. So all that Tosafot says is the word Hekdesh adds the dynamic or the dimension to the nether that it applies to everyone and not to just this individual. So Tosafot says it's konam kikar zo. And then Hekdesh means that it applies to everybody. It's restricted to everyone. And that's what the word adds. You have Rashi who says the word Hekdesh is not meaningful at all. You have the Rosh who's saying that's the only thing that's meaningful over here, because this is really Kikar Zo Hekdesh is really meaning Hekdesh. And Tosafot who says that Konam Kikar Zo is the main net there over here. The word Hekdesh adds on this dimension that it applies to everyone. Well, he says Konam means that that's the Isur is created through Konam Kikar Zo. Hekdesh means like Hekdesh. Just like Hekdesh applies to everyone, so too this nether applies to everyone. Not that that's creating the Isur, it's giving you the scope of this nether. That this nether is broadly applicable and not just applicable to one individual or a specific group of individuals. So then after he takes such a nether, v'achala, and then he ate it. Ben hu, u ben chaveiro. Whether it was him, or whether it was his friend, ma'al. And there's mi'ilan. Now according to the Rosh, this is very simple, because this is real Hekdesh. Kikarzo Hekdesh, it really is Hekdesh. So whether he eats it, or whether his friend eats it, there is mi'ilan. Lefika cheshlan pidyon. And so too, there's the ability to redeem it. Because if you're makdish something for its monetary value, then you can redeem it. And the hekdesh, or the kedusha, will transfer over to the monies. And the object will be released from that kedusha. According to the Rosh, it's very easy to understand this part of the braita. The other hand, according to Rashi and Tosafot, this is part of the machloket tanaim that we're talking about, that konamot actually have a din like Hekdesh. And over here, he created a konam, but the konam works in this instance because it's broadly applicable. And since it is broadly applicable, therefore, it functions just like Hekdesh, and whether it's him or his friend that partakes of this item, they will be chayav in mi'ilah, and also the object will have pidyon. Kikar zo alai. So now, again here, with the word Hekdesh, it probably the lamet should not be in the word. It should be parallel to the first case, which is konam kikar zo Hekdesh. Over here it is, kikar zo alai Hekdesh. So over here he didn't use the lashon of konam, but he rather used the lashon of Hekdesh. But here he needs the word Hekdesh, because that's the thing that's making it asur over here. When he says kikar zo alai Hekdesh, obviously he's not making it into Hekdesh. He wants it to be asur like Hekdesh. Vachala, in that case, if he eats it, hu ma'al, then there is a mi'ilah for him. Chaviro lo ma'al. On the other hand, his friend, there is no mi'ilah for him. Fikach ein la pidyon. Based on that, there is no redemption for the item. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is the position of Rabbi Meir. According to the Rosh, Rabbi Meir has two statements over here. One statement is that Hekdesh has mi'ilah associated with it, which is an obvious statement that has no bearing, and it's not even relevant to our case over here. But the second case is what's relevant to us over here, that Rabbi Meir believes that if you say kikar zo alai Hekdesh, then in that case, the individual himself, who is now restricted, he can be mo'el, or he can be in violation of mi'ilah, whereas his friend cannot be violation of mi'ilah, because he only restricted it on himself. On the other hand, according to Tosafot and the Rashi, who think that the whole thing is talking about konamot, that's teaching us the difference between different types of konamot. In a konamot that applies broadly to everyone, like Hekdesh, then in that case, everyone is mo'el in the konamot, or the Isur Neder that's created over here. And that also allows there to be a pidyon, a redemption over here. Because that means that the kedusha is strong enough, or powerful enough on the object that you can actually take it off. Somewhat counterintuitive, but the Gemara says this in many places, that if the kedusha is weak, or a weak form of kedusha, you can't redeem it. because the Kedusha doesn't have what I call an existence of its own, and therefore it's very hard to remove the Hekdesh from that object and move it on to another object. On the other hand, if it's full-fledged Kedusha, which almost in a sense stands on its own, then you can redeem the object and move the Kedusha from one object to the other object. Therefore, in the first case, where the Konam is broadly applicable, that means that everyone is restricted in this Kikar, then number one, everybody has a restriction on Mi'ilah. Number two is you can redeem it. Just like you can redeem Hekdesh, here you can redeem the Konamot, because it's broadly applicable to everybody. In the second instance, where the konam, or the restriction here, is only on the individual themselves, then in that case, the individual themselves is subject to the Isser Mi'ilah, because there is Mi'ilah b'konamot, according to Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, other parties who are not restricted cannot be Mo'el in the object, but that also has a derivative impact, which is you can't redeem this object. You can't take the Isser off this object, just like you couldn't take Hekdesh off this object, because the only when the Hekdesh is very strong and applies to everyone can you redeem it. Over here, where the Isur, or the quote-unquote Hekdesh, only applies to one individual, then you cannot redeem it because the Kedusha is not strong enough to be moved from that object onto the monies. So that is the position of Rabbi Meir. Chamirim ben kach, u ben kach lo ma'al. In neither instance is there mi'ilah, lefi she'ein mi'ilah b'konamot. Because there is no such thing as mi'ilah b'konamot, according to the Rosh. That's only about the second statement of the Bright over here. There's no konamot, meaning benzeh. Benzeh means doesn't matter if it's the guy himself or the friend, neither one of them is Moel. According to Rashi and Tosafot's reading over here, it's ben kach, ben kach means in the ratio or the seifa, there's no din of mi'ilah by konamot, according to the Chachamim. So Amalei, Rav Acha, pray the Rav Avio, the Rav Ashi, kikari alecha, v'natanolo b'matana. So in a case where he says, kikari alecha, the person now restricts his friend from benefiting from this kikar. So the madir over here makes the other individual, the mudar, restricted in a loaf of bread that he has. And then he gifts it to the individual. Mi ma'al. Who is chayav in mi'ilah in this case? Lim ol notain. Should the gifter over here be in violation of mi'ilah? Halo asire alei. Over here, it's not restricted on him. Now, this goes back to something that we discussed around the Masechta, and the Ran himself brings it up over here. With regards to Mi'ilah, the changing of hands in Mi'ilah, which is basically the misappropriation of Hekdesh, generates a violation of Mi'ilah. So over here, if the Notain is giving it to the party that is Asur, then he's causing a change in ownership over here, removing it from his ownership, giving it to the other individual's ownership. So in that sense, he should trigger mi'ilah. But as the Gemara points out, he's not restricted. The individual who's gifting over here, the madir, the one who took the neder, he's not restricted in his kikar. It's the other party that's restricted in the kikar. So how could he be chayab for mi'ilah if he's not even restricted in the object? The Ran says, you know what? That proves that I'm right and the Rambam is wrong. What was that? That's earlier back in the Masechta and Daf, Tedvav. We saw Machloket Rishonim between the Rambam and the Ran over there as to who is Chayav when there's a violation of a Neder. Like in an instance like this, where Reuven takes the Neder and Shimon is the party that is restricted in the Hana'a. Who gets the Malkot or who is in violation over here? The Ran, as we know, focuses very much on the Maseh HaIsur, the one who violates the Isur itself. So therefore the Ran says, only Shimon can be Chayav in Malkot if he does something wrong. So even though the neder was generated through Reuven, Shimon is now bound by that neder because it creates a chepsa shel isur. If this individual, Shimon, goes ahead now and violates that isur chepsa, he's going to be chayav malkot. On the other hand, the Rambam says in Mishnah Torah that no, that Reuven, who took the neder, is the one in violation. Because Shimon didn't make the neder, how could he be in violation of Baal Yachel if he's not the one who took the neder? Therefore, the Rambam says that if Reuven facilitated Shimon violating the neder, meaning he gave him the object to get benefit from, then Reuven would be chayav malkot. But Shimon can never be chayav malkot. And we saw that the Rambam himself was very much focused on Baal Yachel Devaro, that one must keep their word. And the violation of keeping your word, which was the Isur that we were focused on. The Ran says from this Gemara over here, I'm right. Because it says, how could it be possible that the Notain, the gifter over here, is Moel, because halo asira ele, he's not restricted in it. The Ran says, that's my proof. you see here that the person who takes the nether can't be the one who's chayav, because again, he's not the restricted party over here. And the Rambam says that's not the case. The Rambam says the case is up. No, the person who took the nether is the one who could be in violation and is the one who could get makot. So you can see it in the Ran. He says, "Mikan shuvo the Rambam zal." Shvatav amadir et chaveru bechila bechilo lokeh mishum lo yachal debro. K'mosh ketavti lamalo. As I explained earlier in the Masechta. And here the Ran says, this is my proof that the Rambam is wrong. That the individual over here, who is the one that is taking the nether, but he's not restricted in it, he can't be the one or the party that is in violation of the nether. Although some of the Achronim try to answer on behalf of the Rambam to say that there's a difference here between what we call the Iser Gavro and the Iser Chepza, that even though there is still a violation of Bali Achel over here, that's only an Iser Gavro. But the Iser Chepetz at Smol, there's no Iser, and therefore Me'ilo can't be generated by this individual. So basically, the Achronim differentiate between Mi'ilah and Ba'yachel Devaro in order to defend the Rambam's position versus what the Gemara seems to indicate here, supportive of the Ran's position. So the Gemara says, all right, Limol Mikabel. So maybe the recipient should be in violation of Mi'ilah. Yechod Amar, Hetera Be'iti, Isur Alo Be'iti. You can say, look, I wanted Heter. I didn't want Isur. I didn't ask you to give me Isur. I only expected you to give me something that was mutar. So if it's asur, I don't want to accept it over here. Now what's interesting is that in general with regards to mi'ilah, mi'ilah is violated even bishogeg, even if it's done unintentionally. Over here, that's exactly what's happening. The recipient is basically saying, I was duped. I thought I was getting something that was mutar. Now that I find out that it's something that's asur to me, I don't want the gift. I'm rejecting the gift entirely. So then if the gift doesn't go through, then how could he be in violation of Mi'ilah? Now the question is, well, in Mi'ilah, you don't need to know about it. It doesn't need that. It's something that happens even bishogeg. So what type of claim does he have over here by saying that, I really didn't want the gift? Because we do have a Shinei Rishut that took place, even if it happened bishogeg. How the Ran explains it over here is, V'afagav demotzim Rishut Hekdesh, efshar dafilu b'ta'ut. When you take something out of the possession of Hekdesh, that can happen even accidentally or unintentionally. Ma'al, and then there's Mi'ilah. Shiny Olcha. Our case here is different. Shuhu lo hotziya. He's not the one causing the transition or the transfer of possession over here. Ela chaveiro hotziya. It's his friend who's activating it. Mezelo asa ela shekibla. He didn't do anything except accept it. So if he wants to reject the acceptance and say, I only want to accept things that are mutar, that is his prerogative. So here, the difference between what we say by Hekdesh when it happens unintentionally is because the party who is causing the change in ownership or possession is the party who's in violation. In our case, that's not the case. In our case, the individual who's causing the change in possession or ownership is not the one who's going to be in violation. It's the recipient who's going to be in violation. And the recipient has a right to reject in that case and not accept the gift. And that's why it's different than a normal case of Mi'ilah. So now, Amalei, Mikabel Ma'al Kadeshiyotzi. He says, I'll explain it to you. The Mikabel, the recipient is Moel, not now when he receives it, but rather when he gives it to someone else. Because as we said before, when you are the one changing the possession, you can be in violation when you actively cause the change of possession, even if it's unintentional. Shekol HaMotzi Ma'ot Hekdesh L'Chulin, K'Savur She'Chulin Hu Moel. Because any person who transfers money of Hekdesh, and spends it or expends it as if it's chulin, because he thinks it's chulin. Nevertheless, he is moel. He's in violation of mi'ilah. Avze moel. So too, this individual over here is in violation of mi'ilah. So in that case of kikari alecha, you have the person who's taking the neder. He certainly is not in violation of mi'ilah because he has nothing that is asur to him. The recipient, who is the one who has the isur associated with him, can't be in violation of Mi'ilah if he simply gets the object because he didn't do anything actively. And if he knew about it, he would reject the gift. So the only way for him to become Chayav is if he accepts it from the first party and then he himself gifts it or gives it or expends it to another party. In that case, even if it's done unintentionally, he will be held accountable for that and he will be in violation of Mi'ilah. So that'll be the instance where there will be a violation of Mi'ilah. And the Gabay Halacha, the Ran over here says, Linyan Alocha, Kaimelon Ke Rabbi Meir. We pass on like Rabbi Meir, Diesh Mi'ilah Bekonamot. that there is Mila Bikonamot, the Ha Rav Nachman Pashit Le the Rova Mitanitin, because Rav Nachman over here explained to Rova from our Mishnah that that's the case. And he explained our Mishnah according to Rabbi Meir. And we know in the Gemara in Baba Batra as well, the Gemara there flips the positions of Rabbi Meir and the Rabbonon, and therefore it would make it even more compelling that the Halacha is Yesh Mi'ilah B'Konamot, because then it would be the Shita of the Rabbanan. B'Kaimala Nami, the Konam Klali, Yesh Lo Pidyon. If the Konam extends to everybody, meaning it's Asur to everyone, then you have the ability to redeem it. U'mistapa Gali, this is very interesting, it says I have a Safek. Manda Mal B'Konamot, imishtari ha'u Konam, the Batar D'Ma'io, Yekdesh, Shiotzi Chulin Ayidei Mi'ilah. The principle by Hekdesh is if someone misappropriates Hekdesh and then becomes Chayav in Mi'ilah, meaning that he has to make compensation for the misappropriated Hekdesh plus bring a Korban, it also causes the object now to become Chulin. Because his Mi'ilah works, if it were successful, the Mi'ilah at the misappropriation, that means he moved it out of the possession of Hekdesh into Chulin. And if he is successful, it actually does become Chulin. At least if he does it B'Shogeg, it becomes Chulin. And the object is no longer Hekdesh. Now, Hekdesh won't lose because this individual has to pay Milah. He has to pay 1/5 times whatever the value of the object is. Plus, you have to bring a Korban of an Hashem Milah. What the Ran says is not clear from the Gemara over here. What is the din with regards to Konamot? In Konamot, if I misappropriate, quote-unquote, the Konam, meaning that I violate the Isur of the Konam, now I'm Chayav in Milah. Does Milah in that instance have the same impact on the nether, meaning that this object is no longer Asur now? The Isur Neder now falls away of Konam, just like Hekdesh would fall away. He says, mistopically, I don't know how to do that. The Gemara is comparing them, but only compares them with regards to the Din of Mi'ilah, but doesn't make it clear whether it means the totality of the Din of Mi'ilah, which means that also Mi'ilah frees the object from the Hekdesh, and it becomes Chulin. Maybe over here also the Konam would be released from the object if the person was Mo'el, quote unquote. All right, so now we go to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah continues what we saw in the previous Mishnah. The case where an individual is restricted in Hana'ah, or restricts another individual in Hana'ah from him, what is he allowed to do for him? So we saw in the previous Mishnah that he can be Pore et Chovo, Shoklo et Shiklo, he can pay for his Shekel, he can be Makzir et Avedoto. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Vitoreim et Trumato. He's allowed to be Mafrish Truma for him, Umasrutav Lidato. If the individual is okay with it, then he can be Mafrish's Trumot and Masrot on his behalf. Now, what exactly is the circumstance? It says here, Midato. Reuven has to acquiesce to this or give permission to this. If Reuven says to Shimon, go ahead, take off the Trumot and Masrot from me, then certainly that does not work, because then Shimon's in violation of the Yisra Hana, because Reuven is making Shimon into a Shliach, into a proxy for himself to do something on his behalf. And that means now that Reuven is getting benefit from Shimon. So that won't work in that case, because he made it asur from Hana'ah for him to get any benefit from Shimon. Oh, so then what's the case? Right, the Mishnah says he can't do it. So the Gemara will explain to us that it's a case where he says, Kol ha-rotzeh litrom toreim. Anybody who wants to do this can do this. So he doesn't specifically point to a proxy to do it. He just gives permission for whoever so chooses to go ahead and do it. So then if Shimon steps in and is mafrish, the trumot for Reuven, then that's fine, because he's acting of his own volition. He's not acting as a proxy for Reuven. Reuven gave his approval for anybody who does it, and that's why it works. But in the end, Shimon is just doing a mitzvah, being mafrish trumot masrot, and therefore it works. In a case where it's actually Shimon being mafrish the trumot and masrot from his own possessions, from his own trumot, then he might not even need the permission of Reuven to do it, because then he's not expending Reuven's money or taking off the Trumot of Masrot from Reuven, he's taking off his own property. And then in that case, he might not even need the permission of Reuven. But the case that we're talking about here is where it's out of Reuven's own possessions, being Mafrish the Trumot of Masrot. That's why he needs permission, but he needs a more generalized permission, not a specific directive to do it, because then he becomes a proxy and it'd be a problem, because then he would be benefiting Reuven in that case. Umakriv alav kinei zavin, kinei zavot, kinei yoldot, Chataot ve'ashamot. Now, if the individual is a Kohen, and Reuven now restricted himself in getting Hana'ah from Shimon, and Shimon happens to be a Kohen, that Kohen, Shimon, could be Makriv alav kinei zavin. He can't bring for him a pair of birds. That's why it's used in plural over here, because every time you bring them, there's a pair involved. Whether it's a zav, or a zava, or a yoledet. In all these cases, these are people who are mechusarei kapara, and at least in one manifestation, they have the possibility of bringing a korban through birds. It's not all the case. Some of these korbanot, like the case of the yoledet, is an olev yored, which it changes by the economic ability of the individual to pay. But at least the poorest individual will bring a kinim, would bring a pair of birds in order to free themselves of the restrictions that are involved in their tuma. And the same with the chatadot and hashemot that we're speaking about over here. We're speaking about korbanot that are brought in order to free these individuals. They are mechusarei kapara. And once the kapara is brought, then they have the entitlement to enter into the mikdash and partake of kodeshim. So if the kohen acts on behalf of this individual, that is totally fine over here. That's not considered to be mehanehim. That's not considered to be giving him hana'ah in this case. In addition, umelamdo midrash halachot ve'agadot. The individual, if he's a teacher, can't teach him midrash. Midrash over here is whether it's midrash agada or midrash halacha. A midrash halachot ve'agadot. Right? We have the midrash halacha, which is like the mechilta, the sifri, the sifra. Those are the midrashei halacha. Or the midrashei agadot, like you have the midrash rabba, you have the tanchuma. Those are midrashim of agadot on the psukim. He's allowed to teach him. But that is Torah shebe'al peh. And we know, we're going to learn in the Gemara later on, that you're not allowed to charge for teaching Torah. At least Torah shebe'al peh, you're not allowed to pay, charge for teaching Torah. Since he can't charge for it, then he's not giving him any benefit. When he teaches him, he's obligated to teach, and he's obligated to teach for free. So if he teaches this individual, then he's not giving him any anah, because this individual's not saving any money, and he's not gaining anything that otherwise this person doesn't have to provide. And mitzvot lav le'enot itnu. Mitzvot are not made to give anah. If he's teaching Torah, he's doing a mitzvah. And if he's accomplishing the mitzvah of learning Torah, teaching Torah, there's no hanah that is passing over here. Aval lo yilamdenu mikra. He may not teach him Torah shebichtav, which the Gemara will talk about. There, you're allowed to charge for teaching Torah shebichtav. It's called pisuk tamim, because of teaching him how to punctuate or to do the trump. There, you're allowed to take compensation for that matter. And since he's allowed to take compensation, if he teaches him, then you have a problem over here, because teaching him then is big mehanehim. You're giving him a benefit, even if he compensates for it. Even if he pays for it, there's still a nature of hana'ah, the fact that you can receive compensation over here. Aval, melamed hu et banav, et bonotav mikra. But he is allowed to teach the children of this individual. So Reuven, who restricted himself from getting hana'ah from Shimon, Shimon may not teach Reuven mikra, but Shimon can teach Reuven's children mikra. Because over there, first of all, the restriction of hana'ah is only to the father. Number two is, the father's obligation to teach the child is a mitzvah. And since it's a mitzvah, mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu. So all that Shimon is doing over here is replacing Reuven in doing the mitzvah. He's not giving hana'ah to Reuven directly. He's simply doing the mitzvah that Reuven was otherwise commanded to do, to teach his children. Shimon is doing that instead. And since he's only acting as a proxy to do this, then as a proxy to accomplish the mitzvah, mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu, and it's fine in that case. Now, as far as compensation is concerned over here, the Balei HaTosafot suggest that the person's not obligated to pay to educate his children. The truth is that that's not so simple. And the fact that the Balei HaTosafot say it is very strange, the Rosh later on in our sugya says that maybe he'll find someone to educate the children without having to pay them. And therefore, when you come in and educate the children, you're not really saving them any money, because there was this possibility that he could do it without you coming or without having to make any compensation.
All right, Ibailo, here the Gemara asks a question. It's an interesting question, only because the Gemara asks it in other places and comes to a conclusion. The Gemara here asks, Ibailo, Hane kane, the Kohanim, Shluchei didan avu? Are they our proxies, our messengers to Hashem? O Shluchei deshmaya? Or are they the representatives of Hashem? Meaning that the Kohanim, when they are clearly acting as liaisons between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they do the avodah and the mikdash. They bring the brachot and birkat kohanim to Bnei Yisrael. So they're definitely functioning as an intermediary liaison between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. Question is, who are they functioning for? Whose liaison, ambassador, or representative are they? Are they our ambassadors to Hashem?
Are they our representatives to Hashem, or is it the other way around? They're Hashem's representatives to us. Why does it matter? The Mai Nafkamina, the Gemara asks. The Mudar Hana is exactly for our case over here. Someone who's restricted in getting benefit from the Kohen. Iamart Shluchei Didanavu. If they are our proxies, Hamahanile. Then when he goes and acts on behalf of this individual, then he's giving him benefit. Because then, basically, the Kohen is acting on the directive of this individual. And by the fact that he listens to him and acts on his directive and is acting as proxy, that's a benefit to the party. And then it would be asur b'hana'ah. And you can't do it. Vasur. V'yamar shluchei d'shmayo. On the other hand, if they are the representatives of Hashem, shori, then it would be mutar. As the Ran says over here, because, in that case, ein ze'ela g'rmat hana'ah be'alma v'shori. Because that's only indirect benefit that is being generated, which would be mutar. Which is, let's say this individual now, he is a mechusere kapara. He needs these korbanot in order to release him from the restriction of going to the mikdash, but from eating hekdesh. If this kohen goes ahead and brings the korbanot from him, why is he bringing the korbanot? Because God said to him to do it. They're working on behalf of God. Ah, what about the fact that now he benefits this individual, that now he is allowed to go into the mikdash. He is allowed to eat hekdesh. That's a side benefit, a derivative benefit. It is only groma. That is the outcome of him working for Hashem. But this individual also gets that benefit that he's freed. But since he's a representative of Hashem, therefore there's be mutar. Gemara says, Mai, what's the din? Tashma, Ditznan, our Mishnah. Our Mishnah here says, Makriv alav kinei zavim. Here, our Mishnah says he's allowed to bring these korbanot on behalf of the individual. Iamart shluchei didan. If they say that they are our representatives, kamahanile, then he would be giving him a benefit. And if that's the case, how could he bring these korbanot? Our Mishnah clearly indicates that he's allowed to bring the korbanot. If the Kohen's allowed to bring the korbanot, even though the balim of the korbanot are restricted in receiving hana'ah from this Kohen, that means that our Mishnah believes that the Kohenim are shluchei dishmaya. Mar says, v'litameich, litnei makriv alav korbanot. If you are right, then our Mishnah should have said something totally different. Our Mishnah gives a list of korbanot, very specific korbanot, that are mutar for the Kohen to do on behalf of the Baalim. How come our Mishnah doesn't just say the generic statement, makriv alav korbanot, that he's allowed to bring any korban on behalf of the Baalim? Had it stated in that manner, then it would have been clear that the reason in our Mishnah the Kohen is allowed to function over here, or allowed to work over here, is because he is a shluchei d'shmaya. The fact that the Mishnah does not say that generic statement, and rather gives these specific examples, tells you, Ele mechusarei kapara shayni, that our Mishnah is talking about a very specific type of korban, which the Kohen is allowed to act on behalf of the Balim for, and that is mechusarei kapara, those individuals who are lacking in this kapara. Da'amar Rabbi Yochanan akol tzrichim dat chutz mechusarei kapara. The reason being that the Kohanim can only function on behalf of the Balim if they have permission from the Balim, or another party can only act on behalf of the Balim if the Balim know about it. So for instance, if an individual is chayav a chatat, a Kohen can't go ahead and bring the chatat on behalf of the Balim without the Balim's knowledge. In addition, one of their friends can't come to the Mikdash and pay for a chatat for them and have the chatat brought on their behalf. It doesn't work. You need that Balim for the korbanot. The exception to that rule is mechusarei kapara. By mechusarei kapara, you do not need the acquiescence or the knowledge of the Balim for that korban to work. That means that the Kohen could bring it on behalf of the Balim without the Balim knowing, or another party could actually give the korban on their behalf in order to free them or release them from this mechusarei kapara. The main issue or the main difference between them is whether the korban is coming for kapara, or is it just coming to be matir them. In the case of mechusarei kapara, the korbanot are all coming to be matir them. It's freeing them from a restriction against going into the Mikdash and eating Kodoshim. That can be done without them or without their knowledge at all. On the other hand, if a korban is coming for kapara, like a chatat, that is brought specifically for kapara, over there you need the Balim to be participants and to be aware of the korban, otherwise it does not work. So that's the difference between them. But the fact that you do not require the Balim to know about it or to be involved at all in the case of mechusarei kapara, that now makes it that the Kohen who does it or acts on their behalf is actually not benefiting the Balim. Because you don't need the Balim at all. The Balim don't have to point the Kohen directly to do it on their behalf. Kohen can do it of his own volition on their behalf. If that's the case, then there's no direct hana'ah that is transpiring over here. And the Ran notes over here, even though Rabbi Yochanan makes the statement, mid Rabbi Yochanan nami damar kol tzrichim dat, lo mifshta bayin lomar d'shluchei didaninu. You can't conclude by other korbanot that they are shluchei didan. Dika lameimar derachmana shavino de kohenei shluchim kohecha dika dat balim. Because what you could say is that the Torah made the Kohanim into Shluchim when the Balim agree. Meaning that they are not our proxy, and that's not why you need Dat Balim. Dat Balim just triggers the ability of the Kohen to act on behalf of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in that instance. So you can't prove from Rabbi Yochanan that by other Korbanot, for sure, they are Shluchei Didan, because you're requiring Dat Balim, because Dat Balim might just be a trigger to allow them to be Shluchei Derachmono. Sure, and I can prove that to you. Sure, Adam may be Korban. Albanav valbanotav haktanim. A person can bring a korban on behalf of his youngsters, his minor children. Shneamar, because it says zot torat hazav ben gadol ben katan. Torat, the way Rabbi Yochanan reads the word torat, torat means for everyone, anybody and everyone. That means that a father could bring on behalf of his minor children korbanot for releasing them from the mechusrei kapara of zav or zava. They are able to do that on behalf of their children. And clearly a katan does not have dat, or cannot make his father into a proxy in this case, so it shows you that you can act on behalf of another party even without their knowledge. Elamiato the Rabbi Yochanan. What's Rabbi Yochanan going to do with this? Zot torat ha-yoledet. That we also have the word torat used by the yoledet. So by zav, you explain it to me. So zot torat ha-zav means not only the father can bring it for himself, but he can also bring it on behalf of his children. Now, what are you going to say by yoledet? By yoledet, the father can bring it for himself, meaning his wife. Oh, and he also can bring it on behalf of his children. Wait a minute. Ben ktana ben gdola, that's how you can explain yoledet. Ktana bat leidahi? A minor doesn't give birth. She's not a yoledet. So then what are you going to learn out of the word torat over here? You can't be talking about someone who's over the age and someone who's a minor, because minors aren't even relevant in the parsha of yoledet. Vahatani, rabibi kameh de Rav Nachman. Don't we've seen this numerous times. This is saying from rabibi. Before Rav Nachman, shlosh nashim mishamshot b'moch. There are three women that either, machloket rishonim, either have the option to use contraception in this case, or according to other rishonim in the Ran, echoes that here in the Gemara here, they must be mishamesh. They must have beyond with contraception because of the dangers involved. There's sakanat nefashot. Ktana. Umuberet, uminika. The muberet, uminika, some woman is pregnant, or a woman is nursing. They're over there, we're worried about the health of the fetus. In the case of muberet, that's a much more difficult case over there. We've discussed before the shito of the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam and how it's difficult. Minika, a woman is nursing, we're afraid that if she gets pregnant again, it's going to cause the nursing to stop and it will endanger the life of the baby who is nursing. And ktana is a minor. The assumption being, ktana, Shemet titaber vitamut, because by ktana she might get pregnant and pass away. The assumption being that if she does become pregnant, she will pass away. Although the Gemara in other places, and we've seen this number of times, answers in the end that it's not shemet titaber v'shemet tamut. Maybe she'll become pregnant and maybe she will die. It's not definitive. It's not 100% that she will die. That's one way to explain it. You have to say, according to those opinions that say that having a child, if the woman does become pregnant when she's a ktana, that's indicative that she's not a ktana. That there's no greater siman that you're not a ktana than if you're pregnant. If you're pregnant, right, that shows that you are not a ktana anymore. But in that case, what you see here is that a ktana does not become pregnant. If she doesn't come pregnant, that there's no zot torat ha-yoledet for a ktana. So then how does Rabbi Yochanan, who says the word Torah comes to include not only the father, but also the children, how are you going to explain that by torat ha-yoledet? Where it says, ha-i zot torat ha-yoledet ben pikachat ben shota. Means whether she is a woman of sound mind, or whether she is a woman who is not of sound mind. I mean that katan, or the problem by katan that the father can fill in for, is that katan doesn't have dat. They're unable to act on their own behalf, and they're unable to appoint proxies to act on their behalf. Well, a shota has a similar issue, or similar problem, which is that she doesn't have the capacity or the dat to act on her own behalf, as well as she doesn't have the capacity to appoint a proxy on her behalf. And so therefore, zot torat ha-yoledet comes to include ben pikachat ben shota, shekein. And how do I know that's the case? Adam evi korban al ishto shota kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda. Because a husband can bring, on behalf of his wife, a korban yoledet, even though she's not of sound mind. So that you see here, the father can act, or the father or the husband can act on behalf of these other parties without their knowledge, acquiescence, or even dat whatsoever. So that shows you that mechusrei kapara are in a different league of korban. They're not similar to other korbanot because they have this very unique property to them, which is that parties can act on their behalf without their knowledge. If that's the case, when the kohen acts, then he's not really acting as a direct proxy of theirs. He doesn't even need their permission. He doesn't even need them to appoint him as a shliach. He can do this without their permission, without their acquiescence, and it would still work. If that's the case, the kohen is not really providing them with any hana'ah. So then, the Gemara says over here, that's like the sheet of Rav Yehuda. And it turns out the truth is it's not just the sheet of Rav Yehuda, it's also the sheet of the Tanna Kamma in the Braita. The only thing is that we don't know who the Tanna Kamma is. Rav Yehuda comments in the latter half of the Braita, and therefore we just know that Rav Yehuda has this opinion, so we assign it to Rav Yehuda. But the truth is that even the Tanna Kamma agrees with Rav Yehuda with regard to this. The Tanya, Rav Yehuda Omer, Adam Mevi Korban Ashir Al Ishto, that a husband is required to bring a Korban Ashir for his wife. His wife, in truth, is completely poverty-stricken, because a woman has no independent ownership. Anything she owns goes into her husband's possession. If that's the case, then every woman who gives birth will be bringing a korban ani, because they don't have any possessions. What Rav Yehuda says, what the Braita says over here, whether this is a Braita or a Mishnah, is subject to machloket. The truth is that it is a Mishnah, but the Mishnah doesn't have the closing part of what we're going to read over here, and that's why Rashi and Ran and others call it a Braita, or say that it's a Braita over here. So the Tanya, Rav Yehuda Omer, Adam evi korban ashir al ishto, v'chol korbanot shechayevet. And any other korban that she's obligated in, the husband then becomes obligated in. So if a woman is obligated to bring a korban, the husband now becomes the obligatory party to bring it on her behalf, because they are basically a single union. And since the husband is wealthy, then the woman's korban, or economic determination for the korban, determined by her husband, not by her own standing. But you see over here is that the husband can act on behalf of his wife here. And because he acts on behalf of his wife, therefore the korban that is brought is a korban ashir. It's determined by the economic standing of the husband, as well as the fact that any korban that she is chayevet in, he becomes obligated in, and he's responsible to bring on behalf. Now, with the exception to that rule, there's a neder and a nedava. If she voluntarily offers to bring a korban, then the husband's not obligated to fulfill that. The reason being is because otherwise a woman could cause a lot of problems for her husband. If she wants to bankrupt her husband, she can just basically take nidarim all day, saying that she's going to bring korbanot. So if she wants to be spiteful, or there's a difficulty, she has a way to cause tremendous problems for her husband. So in order to avoid that problem, we say that if it's a neder or nidava, then the husband is not responsible for it. But if it's something that's obligatory, something that she, because of whatever violations or circumstances that transpired, she's obligated to bring a korban, then the husband comes also chayav to bring it on her behalf. You see again here this idea that by mechusrei kapara, that the husband functions or acts on her behalf, like here by yoledet, that the husband can act on behalf of his wife, even though she doesn't have knowledge or doesn't have dat, he becomes the obligatory party over here. Shekach kotev la, because this is what he writes to her. And anything, any responsibilities that you have from before this point in time. So the Tosafot, the Balei Tosafot actually here bring two possibilities as to what the explanation is. Is this what's written in the Ketubah? Or is this what's written in the receipt that the woman gives the husband after she's divorced? So one possibility is that it has to do with when they get married. The husband then accepts the responsibility for any indebtedness that the woman has when she comes into the marriage. So the woman is indebted before she comes into the marriage, and she comes into the marriage, and the husband comes responsible for those debts. Only up to the amount of the nechassim that she brings into the marriage. They can't, through the marriage, now obligate him to pay more than she brought into the marriage. But at least up to the assets she brought into the marriage, the husband now becomes the guarantor of those loans or those repayments. And what you see from here is that the husband takes over the obligations or the responsibilities of the wife in that sense. And same by the korbanot. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it, which seems to be more mainstream amongst the Rishonim, is that this is actually the language that the woman gives to the husband. After she receives her get, after she receives her bill of divorce, she gives a receipt back to the husband, freeing him of all achrayut, of all obligations. I mean that he now is no longer responsible for any korbanot that she had to bring, or she should have brought. He's no longer responsible for them. But what you see from that is, that until that point, he was responsible, and he did have to take care of her korbanot. And then according to those Mishonim that believe that this is actually part of the shover that's given for the Gerushin, then the Girsa in the Gemara should be Shekach Kotevet Lo, that she writes to him rather than Shekach Kotev La, that he writes to her. So once again, we see that Mechusarei Kapara are unique breed of Korbanot, which is that they don't require the Balim to be so actively involved in dealing with them. If that's the case, the reason the Kohen can act here, even if you were to say that they were Shluchei Didan, even if they were acting on our behalf or our proxies, the reason that it works over here is because they don't really need a proxy. You don't really need to appoint someone. Anybody can act on your behalf over here without causing an issue. And because of that, they can't prove anything about whether the Kohanim are Shluchei Didan or whether the Kohanim are Shluchei Dishmaya. We'll continue with the questions about this tomorrow, but we'll see that the Gemara here is inconclusive as to whether the Kohanim are Shluchei Didan or Shluchei Dishmaya. The Gemara Kiddushin, based on a memra of Rav Huna, says in the Gemara Kiddushin that it's clear that they are Shluchei Dishmaya. How do I know that? Because we have a rule by Shlichut that a Shliach can only do what you could do yourself. Well, guess what? If you can't bring the Korban, then how could you have the Kohen be your proxy to bring the Korban? The only way that the Kohen can be your proxy to bring the Korban is if you could bring it yourself. And we know you can't do that. From that, Rav Huna proves that the Kohanim are Shluchei Dishmaya. So the Ran and all the Rishonim over here ask, wait, so why is the Gemara even asking the question? We have a very logical proof that they are Shluchei Dishmaya. So Ran says that the Gemara's question over here is not whether Rav Huna is right, but rather maybe we can find a Mishnah or a Braita that would support that position. That's a logical argument of an Amora, and we'll accept it. But if we could find a Braita or a Mishnah that supported that position, we'd be much happier. They claim that the Gemara over here is basically searching for a Tanaic work that would support that position of Rav Huna that is conclusive in the Gemara in Kiddushin, and then they will fail at doing that. Others suggest that the case here is different than the case in Kiddushin, but that we're talking about two Kohanim over here. Both the person who's doing the Avoda and the Mikdash is a Kohen, and the person, the Balim of the Korban, are also Kohanim. So that gets rid of that logic of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says you can only have someone be a proxy if you could do it yourself. Well, if he's a Kohen, he could have done it himself. So maybe over there, Shluchei Didan would work. And our Gemara here is asking about that situation, trying to come to a conclusion about a case where it's two Kohanim, rather than the case in Kiddushin, which is that Ben Yisrael is utilizing the Kohen. Okay, we'll stop over here on the last line on Lamed Hei Amud Bet.